the House Education Committee. And this is the first time in for a while on a Friday, so we welcome the members who have made it to hearing from me, and certainly to those of you in the audience. So with that, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2744. And I see, Jim, you want to read where we are?
This is House Bill 2744. Direct school districts and public charter schools to implement content standards and statewide assessments in mathematics, science, and English. Direct school districts to implement certificate of initial mastery in mathematics, science, and English. Makes implementation for other subjects optional. Declares an emergency. We will be working on dash 18 today.
Okay. Cindy, would you like to come up and explain dash 18 for us?
Cindy Hunt, Legislative Council Office. The Dash 18 amendments, what they do is they take the prior amendments that had added health into the academic content standards, and they still do that. And then where the major changes in the Dash 18 are is over in the section relating to the Certificate of Initial Mastery, over on starting on pages 9 and 10. The Dash 18 also continues the concept that not only do you have a SIM in the three subjects, but now you have the SIM subject area endorsement in those other subjects. The Dash 18s also very clearly say that in order to get the subject area endorsement, you have to have already gotten the SIM. And it says that on page 11, lines 29 and 30, and it says, a student may receive a SIM master, a certificate of initial mastery subject area endorsement only if the student has received the SIM. The other thing that the Dash 18s does is that it incorporates in the Dash 11 amendments. And so the language on page 11, up on line 4, so subsection 4, that directs the state board to establish a minimum number of work samples and then allows a school district to go beyond that minimum upon approval of the department is from the Dash 11. And then the other language from the Dash 11 is found on page 12 where it directs the state board or a school district that they may not make the creation of a student portfolio a requirement for the SIM or a SIM subject area endorsement. Mm-hmm. The other change that the Dash 18s do is based on the testimony of Jim Green from the Oregon School Boards Association and the handling of charter schools. It adds in an applicability clause on page 23 of the draft. And essentially, what we had before is one applicability clause that applied everything to the 03-04 school year for school districts, charter schools, everyone. Now what we've done is done very specific applicability clause for charter schools so that if they have an existing charter, this won't interfere with that. And so what the first clause does in subsection 2 on page 23 is it says for those statutes that a charter school absolutely has to follow, and there's three of those in the bill, they first apply to the charter school if they've entered into a charter, amended their charter, or renewed their charter after the effective date of the act. And then sub 3 takes all the other statutes that don't automatically apply to a charter, but that may, based on their charter, and says if they do apply to them based on their charter, they apply after they've entered into their charter, renewed their charter, or amended it. And that's it in a nutshell.
It's an awfully big nutshell. questions or comments? Well, I think we can feel pretty good about where we are now if we can manage to get it passed here. So, thank you very much, Cindy, for not only coming in today, but also the previous day and the day before that, and the work on working your way through this with us and explaining these things. So, very good. So we're in work session. Representative Hobson, do you want to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the Dash 18 amendments to House Bill 2744, please.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hobson moves the Dash 18 amendments to House Bill 2744. Any discussion? Any opposition? Okay, so ordered. Representative Hobson, do you have another motion for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2744 to the House with a due pass, to the floor, excuse me, with a due pass recommendation. And the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, do we have to do those separately? I remember I ran it. Okay, we're fine. Thanks.
We've checked that out. I think we're okay. Thank you, Representative. Representative Hobson has moved House Bill 2744 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Comments? Questions?
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Nolan.
Just a brief comment. This motion reflects a significant effort and success, I think, for your work and Vice Chair Hobson's work and Vice Chair Farr's work as well. And I want to thank you for shepherding it through and for going out of your way to give a lot of people in a lot of different communities an opportunity to voice their opinions about this issue. You really did go beyond what was required, and that's commendable. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Representative. That's very touching, and I really appreciate that. Okay. Well, Gina, call a roll, please.
Representative Hoffman?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Excuse.
Representative
Lockheed? Aye.
Representative
Belkin? Excuse, at least temporarily. And Backlund votes aye. Having received the constitutional majority, we'll declare the House Bill 2744 passed. And members, if and when our other members return, we will suspend our action at that point and go back and allow our members who are absent at this moment to vote. Okay, with that then, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2744. After listening to Representative Nolan's comments, I feel compelled to name myself as a carrier. So I will carry House Bill 2744. Representative Dalto, we just voted on House Bill 2744, and I'm sure you'd like to vote. So we will reopen the work session on House Bill 2744. Representative Dalto, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Thank you very much. Representative Dalto votes aye, and we'll now close the work session on House Bill 2744.
You want to recess that?
Excuse me.
Work session.
Yes. Pardon me?
You want to recess
yes.
the work session, not close it.
Yes. We will recess the work session on House Bill 2744. Thank you. Okay. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 3044. Jim?
House Bill 3044 allows school districts to seek payment of amount owed by a student from a parent or guardian of a student through collections unit of the Department of Revenue. Sets a minimum amount owed for collection by this means.
Okay, committee, I think we're working on the Dash 5. Cindy is here. Cindy, would you come up? Also, I'm thinking we should, if that's okay, we should call up Patty O'Sullivan. And you can come up now, Patty, or you can wait if you want to, whichever is your choice. And we'll start with Cindy.
Cindy Hunt, Legislative Counsel's Office. The Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 3044 are a complete gut and stuff of the original bill. The original bill dealt with collection of debt by school districts. The Dash 5 amendments look a little different than some of the prior amendments that I think were in front of the committee.
in that they amend a couple of statutes. One of our eager lobbyists, doing his job, reviewed the bill and asked me a question about one of the statutes and how it interacted with the existing statute. And he was correct that there was a problem with that, so now these new amendments remedy that problem and work the bill into the statute so that there is no conflict. And so what these amendments do is they direct the school district that they shall withhold the grade reports, diploma, and records of any student or former student who owes a debt to the school district. The existing law merely allowed them to do that, did not direct them to do that. And then it directs the school district to release these various records upon the payment of the debt. The amendments then go on to direct the school district to collect from any student or the parent or guardian of the student any amount that's over $50 that's owed to the school district. The amendments then go on to current law directs the school districts to adopt due process procedures for when you're going to collect the debt and also when you're going to be withholding the transcript, and the amendments keep that intact and have some very specific requirements around due process, including giving written notice to the student and the parent of the student when a debt is owed, and the fact that the school district intends to withhold the records of the student, and that if the debt's over $50, the amount of the debt, and so forth. And then following when that notice is given, a date that's at least 10 days after the notice, the school district then is directed to withhold the records. And again, if the debt's over $50, pursue the matter through a private collection agency or other method available to the school district. The other method could include going to an appropriate court. And if the school district does seek the debt through a civil action and the school district is the prevailing party, then the court is directed to award the school district costs and reasonable attorney's fees. But this bill very specifically narrows that provision. I know you had another bill in committee that was a little broader than this. Very specifically narrows it to only those civil actions related to the collection of debt owed to the school district. Then Section 2 of the bill amends an existing statute that talks about damage to school property. And what this section does is directs the school districts to determine the reasonable cost of replacing or repairing the school property that a student damaged. And then, again, if the amount owed for replacing that damaged property is over $50, the school district proceeds as if it's a debt under the prior statute that I just mentioned. And they can also, again, go to court to collect their damages if they decide to.
Okay.
And that's it.
And Cindy, when we talk about the debt, that could include lost books, damaged books, school uniforms, PE uniforms, fees.
Right, Representative Backhorn, that's correct. It could include a number of different things. It could include fees for books, locker fees, damage to, you know, a variety of school property, anything like that.
Okay. Representative Farr is back, and we'd like to recess the hearing on House Bill 3044 and reopen the work session on House Bill 2744 so that Representative Farr can cast his vote. So how vote you?
Aye.
Representative Farr votes aye on House Bill 2744. Now we'll close the work session on House Bill 2744, and we'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3044. Cindy, we have a question for you. Representative Hobson, no, that's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a couple. It looks like Patty did through. On line 18, it or 16 through 18, it talks about...
What page, please?
On the first page,
okay.
I'm sorry. The school in the district withholding from a former student. If a student moves from Salem to Portland, Can Salem withhold those records and not send them to Portland?
Representative Hobson, I believe they can't, because under FERPA, which is the Federal Education Records Something Act.
You said cannot?
Cannot.
Good.
And in the bill, subsection 4, which is actually the existing law as well, it says, notwithstanding that direction that you need to be withholding these records, a school district can't withhold the education records under circumstances, it says, described in 326.575, which is basically the state law that implements FERPA. And I believe what that says is that if a child transfers from one district to the next, the school has to send the records. I think it's within 10 days. So that would be an instance where this would not apply. Another instance that's listed here is when such records are requested for use for an appropriate placement of the student, and that relates to special education. So those would be two exceptions that are required by federal law.
Follow-up?
I'm sorry, maybe you said this and I kind of missed it. I was juggling papers here. What about transcripts that are going to higher ed institutions for admission?
Representative Hobson, I'm not sure that those are covered under FERPA. And so I don't think I can give you an absolute answer on that today. If they're covered under FERPA, the answer is they still send them, because then that would be covered under 326.575. But if they're not required under FERPA, then the school district does not send them under this.
Okay, and I have one more of Cindy.
Follow-up?
Mm-hmm. It's on page 3, line 4, subsection, or section 10. If I'm understanding this correctly, we're saying that with the implementation of this bill, it will usurp the authority of a judge to make a decision in a case involving a student and the district?
Representative Hobson, under the bill, if the school district's a prevailing party, so they have to win, then the court is directed to order, you know, costs and attorney's fees, but the court still decides what's appropriate costs and reasonable attorney's fees. But that's correct. Currently, it's at the discretion of the judge.
One more thing.
Follow up.
And that is legal for us to take that authority away from the judge or the court?
We can do that. There are other statutes that direct attorney's fees to prevailing parties.
Okay. And Patty, you had some concerns.
Yes. For the record, I'm Patricia O'Sullivan, Portland Public School District. I just got the amendments late yesterday, and now we have new ones, so my remarks I don't think have been taken care of in the amendments, but I can't be sure. Mm-hmm. But I actually have two main issues with the language, and I first want to say, Representative Backlund, that I applaud you bringing this forward, because I know that for we have over 100 schools, and I think that each school keeps their own records, and it's at the discretion of the principal whether to collect fees that are owed or not collect fees that are owed. We don't have any district-wide mechanism for even knowing how much is out there, much less who has collected what. So first of all, that would constitute a whole new process we would have to do district-wide, which is a cost and is an issue, but it isn't my main two issues. My main two issues are this: when you have the shalls in there, there's no exceptions except for state law or the federal law. It's really a punishment of some children. Some children, especially in really low income areas, come from some family lives that we couldn't even imagine, and so a kid loses a geometry book, and now they want to go to college and they can't get their transcripts or their school, you know, report cards or their diploma, and they have to go home and ask some people, their parents presumably, for some money that either the parents may not have or are willing to give them. And so we're really holding the kid hostage for some family situations that are beyond their control. And anybody that wants to climb out of where they are and go on to college is okay with me. So I don't think we should hold that back. It doesn't allow any exceptions for those kinds of situations. It could be based on income, but it also could be based on some other things. And the folks in the community usually know best. That's my first concern. My second concern is something that's kind of unique to our district, but not really. It's we're getting more international as days go on. And in our district, we have 85 languages that are spoken. 25% of our children speak other than English in their home. They may know English, but their parents may not know English. 85 languages, I'm sure you're trying to think, well, what are they? Well, that's a darn good question. And I happen to have a list. And I'll tell you that our top five languages that are spoken by at least 5% of those 25% kids are English, Vietnamese, Russian, Spanish, and Cantonese. So that's spoken by at least 5% of the almost 6,000 kids that speak other than English. Five other languages spoken are Yoruba, Telugu, Dinka, Dari, Chowchu. I can go on and on, languages you've never heard of and some I can't even pronounce. The problem with this and the reason I tell you that is we're under a Office of Civil Rights agreement to communicate with parents of students when it affects the student. We don't have to translate things about the rummage sale Saturday or the football game, you know, Friday, but we do if it affects that child, their grades, something like this certainly that we're going to withhold their transcripts, their health, discipline. We have to communicate with them, and it's not always written, in the language that's spoken in that household. And we collect that data when they register for school under our agreement with the federal government. So it's very, very expensive to translate. So the five top languages that I mentioned, we translate everything having to do with children into those five top languages. And then everything else is done on a case-by-case basis for that student and that and the singular issue. I faxed and got a little bit of information to translate something one page, and this would be a one page, you know, probably a little form thing saying this is what's going to happen, you have 10 days and this is what will happen if you don't do it. A simple translation is $50 a page. So for Spanish, Russian, that we do that one time, that's pretty cost effective to collect $55. For Dinku, it's $150 a page. If we can find somebody that can translate that language, or if there's a written language to go along with the spoken language. So if there's no written language to go along with the spoken language, we have to find somebody who speaks that language, and we have to bring them to the house to speak to the parents and tell them what's going on with their child. Now, this you're probably going, oh, that doesn't. It happens every day in our district many times. Well, you cannot expel a kid without telling their parents. And if you send it home in English and they can't read it, they'll never know. And if you send it home in their own language, they won't get it if the kids bring it at home. So you can see that it isn't always cost effective in that case. And there's lots of other districts that have this, not to the extent we do, but it's not going to be cost effective for us to translate a piece of paper for $150 to collect $55. So those are the two concerns I have, and I don't know whether we can work out language on that. I don't know. I do know that we should do a better job of it. There's no question of that, and leaving it up to the discretion of the building administrator, I'm not sure that's always a good way to do it. Yet that is the way we do it.
Patty, could you, for our benefit, maybe suggest some preliminary thoughts in terms of how you might construct an amendment to cover the situations that you've brought up?
Sure, back when I suppose what you could do, I mean, if I had my druthers, I just wouldn't have it shall, but we already have that situation, so, and that's not working very well. You have to allow some exceptions based on, first of all, every geographic area of this state has different reasons why some things won't work. But based on that, I would say that the district would need to adopt a policy listing those exceptions and when they would collect and when they wouldn't. And they could make exceptions based on income level and maybe using free and reduced lunch income level as a guideline. And then some extenuating circumstances. If going home to a parent that may be violent to collect $55, and that kid knows that's going to be that we might be putting a child in danger. I mean, there's all kinds of situations that shalls just don't cover, and people in the schools know what those kids' situations are. So I just would hate to put to always say shall do that when. Mm-hmm. And then on the languages, I'd have to think about that. I think that if the cost outweighed the benefit, that should be another exception. Mm-hmm. So we probably, and I don't know whether that's even discriminatory. Cindy would have to tell me. So if a child's family speaks Dinka, we don't collect the money. But if they speak Spanish, we do. I don't know. Those are just suggestions I'm throwing out.
Just off the top of my head, we'd have to base it, I think, on cost and not on the specific language.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It would make me nervous to look
at the specific language in
statute. Well, I wasn't suggesting that, but I'm telling you how much it does cost for that.
And, yeah.
So we know the languages, we will collect it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
Cindy, I'm understanding, too, that the FERPA, with the federal law you referenced, I think it would not permit the withholding of a transcript. If that person is applying to college.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Then the bill allows for that.
And the bill, yeah. So we're talking about the issues then that Patty has raised specifically at this point. Well, I don't think, members, I don't think this is a conceptual type of amendment. I think it needs some thought and some work. And so we're not going to move it to a work session. So with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3044. And maybe we can bring this back. Okay. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3480. And Jim, even though I've opened a public hearing, I'll ask you at this point to read the staff summary.
Thank you. House Bill 3480 establishes a division for talented and gifted children within the Department of Education for the purpose of administering special education programs and services provided to talented and gifted children. And we do have a dash one amendment to discuss.
Okay. Let's see, Bob Seward from the ODE, and come on up, Bob. That'd be great. And Chuck Bennett, you can come up now, or you can wait if you'd like. Okay, that'd be fine.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Seward. I work for the Oregon Department of Education and then the Associate Superintendent for the Office of Special Education, where the programs for talented and gifted children is located in our organization. We are here to address some issues in this bill. I don't subscribe to the idea of giving bona fides when testifying here, but I do want you to know that I was the talented and gifted specialist for the department for 17 years prior to my current work, and was the first president of the statewide association for talented and gifted. I have been an advocate for this program for many, many years. So I approached this task with some ambivalence about where TAG is currently in the state of Oregon and what the issues are around this particular bill. This bill is asking for Department of Education to locate two positions for supportive for talent and gifted education. It works out to be an increase of 1.68 FTE, since we do have about a third of a time person that does do TAG education, and that these be located within a new division at the Department of Education, a division that would be exclusive to implementing talent and gifted education. You'll see in front of you a partial fiscal analysis concerning this bill. I must say that Adrian Sexton from LFO and my office is still working on the final detail of the fiscal analysis because we did not include some additional costs around S&S support for these two positions. So this is a fairly straightforward discussion of how much it would cost in terms of the personnel, the payroll costs for these two positions. You'll see that it's broken out by two positions by expenses for payroll, the bill in the, for position one of $198,950 for one position and $135,000 plus for the second position. We would oppose this bill unless there is new revenue for the positions. And the reason being are many, actually. But let me kind of give you the backdrop. I also am the Associate Superintendent for the Office of Curriculum Instruction and Field Services. Both of the offices that I'm supervising right now have already taken severe reductions in staffing. This has been accomplished through people leaving the jobs and not refilling in order to make do with through the budget reductions that we've had in our two offices. In fact, all of the funds right now in Office of Special Education, excluding the 0.3 FTE for the TAG specialists, are general funds that are required to be spent for maintenance of effort purposes for special education. They're tied up in the federal legislation that requires a certain state expenditure of general funds to maintain our eligibility for the federal funds. Now, so we cannot, in fact, redirect those general funds behind these two positions because they would not meet then our federal maintenance effort requirements. So you really would need to be new dollars, new general fund dollars, to support these two positions.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm wondering if the department has done any analysis on the additional costs that public education faces because TAG students are not getting the resources that they need and maybe are ending up either in litigation or developing IEP plans or other alternative forms of school that are extremely costly that may be avoided if we're able to get them the resources they need.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vakian, I don't have a detailed dollar and cents analysis of that effect. I believe all through all my career that those effects do exist. There was research done in the mid-80s on students, adults that would be eligible under TALEN to get to education and the incidence in adult corrections institutions. It was higher than expected, higher than incidence. So I believe that, in fact, there are those effects. Exact data I don't have for you today are costs.
May I have one more?
Follow up.
Thank you. Given your years of expertise, would you not conclude that maybe we would not be expending additional money than we're already expending? Maybe we'd even save some if we're able to get the resources we need to these kids.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vakian, I believe that that is a distinct possibility. But I'm here today not to argue the value of the program, because I believe there's an exceptional value in cost savings and value added to our society. But that in the situation we're in financially in the Department of Education and the schools are in, we would need additional dollars. I have no capability at this point of redirecting dollars without losing work that we're required to do under federal requirements and under state statutes that's required. That really takes up our workload right now.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dalto.
And so how many people do you have in the department that are directly addressing your federal workload requirements?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, I can't give you the workload, the staffing across the whole agency. So I can talk a little bit about the two offices that I manage. All but the 0.3 FTE for the talent and gifted specialist in the Office of Special Education are directed to meeting federal requirements.
How many people do you have in the Office of Special Education?
34.
And each one of those 34 people are directed by federal mandate?
Yes.
You don't have any idea of how many people are in the total office in the Office of Curriculum Instruction and Field Services?
Actually, I do. Chair Backman, Representative Dalton, I do. It's 30. I have, I believe, 34 and a half. I'd want to check that number, but I believe that's my staffing at this point. And at this time, this year, all but $200,000 or so of the dollars I have available to support that staffing are federal funds under Title IIA, Title IID, and Reading First. So that $250,000 or so are dollars that go to then support all the requirements under Oregon statute to meet requirements that of operating certain programs. There's a variety of them. I have many, many statutes that we address, and those dollars go to support those statutory requirements.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you aware that the legislative intent of this bill is to have the department not propose creating two new, entirely new positions to be funded by general fund, but to try to make an accommodation within your present staffing situation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, I come here without having had consultation with the members that, and particularly you, Representative Dalto, that proposed this bill. I did meet with a couple of the advocates yesterday for a couple of hours talking about this and the other bills that are in front of the legislature. I didn't hear that that was the intent of the legislature. I hear it now, and I understand what your intention is. I'm trying to report where we are at the Department of Education in terms of staffing.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Yeah, follow up.
And so did you consider other options, or do you have other solutions that you could provide to this committee as to suggestions of how to comply with the intent of the legislation without adding these new FTE?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, that's exactly the topic that we discussed yesterday with some of the advocates for this program. I believe we have several ways that we can accommodate to wanting to increase the effort in assuring that teachers meet the needs of talented and gifted students without these two FTE.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bob, just at the very tag end, you mentioned other ways to meet the requirements or the demands for dealing with tag students. We've heard in the previous public hearing that one of the keys to successful programs for TAG students is additional teacher training. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the thought to have two FTEs for TAG instead of the current 0.32 or 0.3 is to accommodate this need for teacher training. And I guess I would be disappointed that we have a certain number of folks within the ODE and that there somehow could not be a reallocation of folks to deal with the subject TAG that is very, very important. I understand that maybe 8 to 10% of a typical school has TAG students. Maybe 11 to 13% have special needs students. Now, I understand the federal government's mandates, but we're talking, 37 to 0.32 here. Somehow, from the perspective of a policy committee, you know, it just doesn't seem quite right. It just doesn't seem that somehow we couldn't figure out a way to reallocate some of those resources to accommodate a very important group of kids. So it's with frustration that I speak when I address this concern.
Mr. Chair, I have the same concerns and have all of the same frustrations that the members of the committee have about the education of talented and gifted children. And I don't come here with glee to talk about the constraints that we have financially in the two offices that I work with or the issues that I have to deal with in meeting all of the federal requirements and the statutory requirements for delivering certain services to school districts and how that has basically eaten up the resources that I have. Given that, I believe that we have a great deal of leeway in using the staff specialists that we do have, our math specialists, our science specialists, our health specialists, etc., and work with them to understand that we need to encourage school districts to provide curriculum instruction in the classroom that meets all the needs of all the kids. And by the way, the vast majority of talented and gifted students are entered in the regular classroom, so that instruction needs to be delivered there, and the teachers need to be able to do that. Our specialists that we currently pay under Title IIA and under Title IID and other federal funds can, in fact, integrate that instructional services to schools, in-service training, etc., that will address the needs of talented and gifted, and I would really like to do that. But what I don't have is the ability to move the dollars around as easily as we might have done in the past.
Thank you. Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With all due respect, Mr. Stewart, you're talking about what we should be doing. Why is the department not doing it already, and why does it take a piece of legislation to sort of loom over the department to say, well, gosh, you know, we really need to do better in accommodating our talented and gifted students? I feel like that's what I'm hearing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, I don't have an answer for that, to be honest. I have been in this position, these two positions I'm in, for about 5 months and actually 4 days in one of them. I believe, and as you know, and I think you can understand, I am an advocate for this program. I believe there's many things that we can do and do better for these kids, and I intend to do that. It just happens that I'm appearing here today.
Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Following up on a point that you made, Mr. Stewart, how many employees do you have at the Department of Education that conduct teacher training programs?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalton, I couldn't name you the number today. I'd have to get that information for you and bring it back.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Do you know how many students we have in Oregon that are in special education programs?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, yes, it's about 13% of the total statewide population.
What's the numbers?
I don't have the number exactly today.
We could estimate that, but we have something like, 565,000 public school students, and if we did some basic math, I think we could compute that. I would hope we could, so...
But
that would give you an idea.
So, Mr. Chair, I thought I saw on the department's website there are about 68,000 students in special ed right now.
Okay.
And what is the number of students that participate in that are identified as talented and gifted students? Do you know?
About 35,000.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, from the department's website, I have a number of about 48,000. And the point that I'm trying to make with that is we have a pretty similar number of students participating in both special education and the TAG program, but we have 37 FTE versus 0.32. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to belabor that point, but to me, there's a pretty clear disparity, which is the reason why I'm bringing this legislation. I don't have another question.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Seward, how much money comes from the federal government for special ed?
For special education, we get in one of our grants, Part B grant, is about $101,000 projected for 03-04, and we distribute 97% of that to school districts for services. And to ask the question, the next question was how much money do we get from the federal government for talented and gifted? We get zero.
Thank you, Bob. Chuck?
Mr. Chairman, Chuck Bennett, representing the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I'm not sure I have a lot to add to what Bob had to say, except to express certainly our understanding for the reason the bill is here and appreciation for the perceived disparity in terms of staffing levels at the department relative to talented and gifted. We don't like to see them quite... I'm not sure it's fair to make it analogous to special ed. I'm not sure that's exactly the correct analogy to be working off of, but and one that it would be troublesome because we could. I assume that if we were to reallocate resources, these would probably come from that very sensitive area. Our primary issue and the main reason I'm appearing here is whether the intention of the bill, and I understood the intention of the bill to be a reallocation of resources, not additional resources, but when I saw that this bill didn't have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means where these kinds of issues tend to be resolved, as we get a whole look at the department later in the session, that's what troubled me, and that's the reason I wanted to ask the committee, if you decide to move the bill, and there are meritorious reasons to or not to, but certainly to move this, given the number of young people involved, et cetera, this kind of issue should be resolved in Ways and Means when we get a look at the entire program and how there's going to be spending. And I think particularly troublesome is, number one, this is a substantial reallocation of resources, somewhere around $300,000, as I understand it. Not new resources if we don't have to add people, but certainly moving that kind of resource around in the department suggests very strongly it ought to be down there. And I think the second thing is having a committee telling an executive agency exactly the number of people to assign to an activity makes me a little bit nervous. It's unusual. And whenever you see a new kind of legislation and a new policy direction at the substantive committee level, you kind of want to have a real close look at it. Is that the way to go? Should you be assigning two people? Why not a half a person, why not two and a half persons, et cetera, to this. That is the executive branch's prerogative, and certainly one that can be discussed down in Ways and Means. Even there, they, as I've seen it in the past, they tend to be reluctant to go to that kind of detail. So I would just hope that, and this is not a plea to send this down there to have it disappear. This is a plea to put it into the perspective of the situation we're in K-12 in terms of funding both for the department and for the state school fund, so we can see it in relation to all other programs and all other needs in education, and that's the only reason to take it down there.
Mr.
So I hope you will look at adding that to this bill.
Representative Farr.
Thank you.
Representative Dalto.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Bennett. The reason there wasn't a subsequent referral to Ways and Means is because we had anticipated this being fully absorbed into the department. Now, the need for intelligent giving, the most pressing need, as you know, being involved in it so heavily yourself, Mr. Stewart, is for training. It's for teacher training. If we could provide even a modicum of teacher training, we could see some pretty dramatic results at the school level, I'm sure. Representative Dalto asked a question that you weren't able to answer, and that's how many people are assigned to training inside of the Department of Education. Could you approximate? Is it 3, or is it 30, or is it 300?
Let me approximate across the two offices that I'm responsible for, because I really honestly can't answer for some of the other offices that have their own associate superintendents. But in the Office of Special Education and the Office of Curriculum Instruction and Field Services, every staff member does training as part of the assignment. I think that would add up to approximately a quarter of the time that we spend with school districts.
Right.
That's an estimation. I'd have to do some time.
Yeah, and it's difficult to say. Yeah. I'm sure how many people are in the entire department, or how many FTEs, so to speak, are assigned to training. But really, that my vision of this legislation is that these two FTEs would come out of that pool of training individuals, mm-hmm. without really micromanaging. It wouldn't have to be two individuals. You know, it could be 15 people in 15 different subject areas providing the equivalent of two FTEs.
Mr. Chair and Representative Farr, that's exactly what I was talking to earlier about, trying to work with our own staff that does training across many content mm-hmm. areas, across many levels of education in schools, to ensure that they have the skills to address the needs of talented and gifted when they work with teachers in classrooms in the field. I think that is a very viable model, and I think it's doable.
Okay.
Follow up?
Mr. Bennett, then I guess my point to you is you mentioned that it would be unusual for us to, say, add two FTEs. I come from the city of Eugene, and in the city council we tell people what to do with every minute of each day. That's our style down there. So I'm a little bit naive as to the process here, but would it be unusual for us to say, out of that entire group of trainers that you have, dedicate two FTEs, the equivalent of two FTEs to training? Would that be unusual?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Farr, I chair the City of Salem's Budget Committee, so I have the similar reaction. We tend to micromanage those folks a lot. But here, that tends not to be the case, and at least that's my recollection and my understanding, is it is just an unusual thing to do this kind, certainly to talk about training, to go through that kind of discussion at this committee, but to try to do it from here without going through Ways and Means, it just seems quite unusual to me. And I may well be wrong. Other people have lots more experience around here than I do. But in talking with folks, this is just an unusual proposition.
Mr. Chair, one more.
If I follow up.
What makes this an unusual situation an unusual situation that requires unusual responses is the fact that there are so many people, both inside the legislation and out in the state, that feel that the department has not paid any attention to talented and gifted. And so because of that, it's difficult to just say, here's your training money, go ahead and assign training. What we're trying to do here really is to say, hey, this is the will of the legislature, and this is the will of the people that elected us, that we want to have people assigned to talented and gifted programs. And so that's what makes this maybe a little more unusual, because the department's not been responding to the needs of the kids in the classrooms.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Farr, the only suggestion I would have is that with the values in place here and certainly the clear support for this kind of bill, that it go to Ways and Means to be weighed against all other priorities in the agency. That's the part I'm having trouble too understanding is why there isn't a Ways and Means referral here.
Just one more.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Now, I've not worked in Ways and Means. I've observed them from a distance. Do they tell the department where to assign their trainers?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Farr, I think even that would be... I'm just trying to recall discussions regarding actual employee disposition. And that does seem... I don't recall that going on personally, but there may be others who remember it just specifically that that's the kind of thing. That tends to be an executive action, is my recollection. Mm-hmm.
Then really what it boils down to me is that Ways and Means isn't going to tell them. And they're obviously, due to what we've been seeing, they're not going to do it themselves. If somebody has to tell them, why not us tell them?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's certainly something you can discuss. The question is whether that's an appropriate action for this committee and whether you think this is, given the situation in K-12, the appropriate use of very limited resources at this point. And I'd ask you then, I hope, to hold on to this bill until you vote for the revenue measures that go with it, because we're talking about real serious revenue shortfalls out there, as you know perhaps better than I do. But when you're going to say that a substantial number of employees in this particular portion of the department are going to be allocated in this way, I hope you are coming up with some ways for us to... I'm trying to remember the number. It's like 100 districts. If you recall, Representative Dalton, you can probably fill me in better. Don't even fund tag at this point. And that's the kind of thing, you know, is this the right way to be doing it? And is this the, I don't know. It sounds great to me. It sounds like a great idea. But why can't it go through Ways and Means? Why can't it go through a normal process to arrive at a conclusion relative to all other aspects of the department's operations?
Thank you, Ms. Brennan. As you know, I highly respect your opinion and your years of experience.
Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With all due respect, Mr. Bennett, I hope you were concerned about the revenue shortfall that's afflicting the K-12 system and not a bureaucracy within the Department of Education. Is that what I heard you say? That you
Mr.
were
Chairman,
worried about
this
the revenue picture for our students?
Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned about the entire shortfall, and it is massive. I think given the governor's report, just to meet the current quality education model, we are at $6.7 billion. The best number we've seen so far is $5.05 billion from the governor. And the number we responded to in the Ways and Means Committee hearings was 4.6. And there are just some real, I mean, when you start looking at these kinds of over $2 billion between one number and the ideal, you're looking at massive shortfalls. So bureaucracy, schools in particular, et cetera, we're talking such huge numbers now that it's just gotten to be a very frightful situation. I know you know that. And no, I'm not trying to protect a bureaucracy or anything else. I'm trying to make sure that when, as we deal with whatever number you give us to deal with ultimately, we're able to allocate those resources most effectively for school children in Oregon. And that seems to happen in Ways and Means.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Bennett, I'm just wondering, you know, I read the language of House Bill 3480 on line 7 to 8, and it says the division created under this section shall be administered by a minimum of two persons who have experience in teaching, tag, etc. And, you know, when I drafted this bill, I didn't stop at 2. I hope it's 5. I hope it's 10. I hope it's 100. I mean, what difference does it make? And I'm sure you agree with me that we shouldn't aspire to a minimum, but, you know, I was struck by your statement about this bill requiring the department to do something specific. I see the language that says minimum of two people. I'm kind of curious what you think an appropriate number might be.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dalto, I think you have to look at this as we ultimately get a chance to look at the entire department budget. And I'm not trying to dodge your question, because I don't know what the right number would be. But I think when you're looking at a department that is going to be facing staff reductions, you've just got to see what else are you losing, what are you gaining, why are you here, what are the needs out there. And I'm not the expert in this. Mr. Seward is far more expert in this than I am. The superintendent, the members of the committee that will be making those decisions. All I'm asking is that this occur in a forum that is dealing with the issue in as kind of holistic a perspective as possible, and that that be the way this be handled. And so all I'm asking is that you attach a Ways and Means referral to this bill, not to, again, the question is I think, a really good question about TAG. There are other bills that ask, I think, superb questions about what are we doing for this group of young people, and I think it's essential we do something. The question is, how does it fit with everything else in such an environment of such declining resources? And it's troubling. You know how troubled I think we all are about this situation.
Lori, come on up.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to weigh in. Lori Wimmer Whalen, representing the Oregon Education Association and now 44,000 members. I wasn't planning originally to testify in this, but I thought perhaps, and you began to touch on it just a few minutes ago, I come to you with two hats today on this bill. One is as a person who follows school finance for the Education Association, and also as a TAG mom whose own kids are having difficulty getting served because of the financial crisis. And I think that this is identifying a piece of the problem. We have kids at all capacity levels with many unmet needs in our schools. And the root cause is not, in my humble opinion, how many staff are assigned out of the Department of Education to provide teacher training, because once you get a well-trained workforce, how are they supposed to cope with the kinds of class sizes they have been confronting and will in the future confront with the budget levels we're talking about? It's one thing to know how to handle TAG education for students. It's another to be able to provide it when you've got 35 kids. We heard on another bill in Portland, there are 85 languages spoken in one district. We've got kids at all ability levels, some in multi-grade levels, because they're trying to do combinations to keep their school doors open at elementaries. My daughter's in a third, fourth, fifth split. They're doing all kinds of creative things to try to cope with a financial crisis, which is getting worse by the minute. And this is not the solution to that problem. And I don't believe, as a TAG parent, that my kids get the resources they need, because TAG is, bluntly, the ultimate unfunded mandate, and all we're talking about really is putting more burden on the classroom teacher to burn more midnight oil to provide something to the kids at that capacity level that there is no federal mandate and federal money to provide services for. And so, to be utterly candid with you, there are a whole range of services inside every school building in this state that are probably not getting served in the ideal. And to cherry pick any one of them is at the expense of all the others.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Seward, I have a question. In identifying TAG students, is it correct that they're part of that percentage of students who are ID'd as TAG are in the music and arts areas?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, that's correct. Actually, we have our current rules require two areas, actually three areas where children are identified. One is in overall intellectual ability, another is in outstanding achievement in mathematics, and another is in outstanding achievement in reading. We permit school districts to also additionally identify students in the arts, both performing and musical arts, and in leadership capability. Districts may or may not do that because it is permissive, and that districts will make choices around that in terms of how they provide services and what they can afford to do. So that will comprise the number that Representative Dalto was referring to. That group would be there.
Follow up.
Would it be fair to say then, Mr. Seward, that when we're cutting money from schools overall, that the decrease in the advanced placement, the physics, the quantitative analysis, the music, and the arts is having a really detrimental impact on our TAG students?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, there are many detrimental effects going on in public schools right now that are affecting the ability of districts to provide basic services to all children, but particularly to talented and gifted children. One of those we discussed yesterday in a hearing around AP. AP classes are being eroded statewide. We have limited resources. We can maintain those resources for the schools that are paid for under the federal law, under our federal grant, which are rural school districts and districts in poverty. There's a vast number of districts that aren't either one of those and get no additional resources at all. So you see AP eroding dramatically across the state.
A comment. I don't think that anyone has been more interested in funding K-12 than I, or as far as that goes, Representative Hobson. We came here in 1999, and I remember when the amount was first proposed at $4.55 billion, and we got up to $4.811 billion. And So any remarks I make are made as a strong supporter of K-12, and I, of course, spent 37 years there. But the focus of the discussion kind of slipped from TAG to funding and a lack of resources, and I agree, but we have to deal with reality. We have to deal with what we have in this case. And we can hope and we can strive and we can work for considerably improved funding. But I'm one who let's stay focused on the ball. Let's stay focused on the ball, and the ball is tagged. And it's not funding, even though I wish we had more. That's one thing. Secondly, I apologize if you feel I'm badgering. I have never done that in my life, and I'm embarrassed that I'm at this point because I've raised my voice. And I really feel badly about that. I've seen legislators who have been rude to those who testify. I think that's terrible. And I'm sorry that I may be in that category. But I am a little fired up. To put it into a certain vernacular. Secondly, or thirdly, whichever it is, sorry, it's been suggested that it's unusual for the legislature to kind of do regret in the way we proposed. But I think, I was in Ways and Means the first session that I came here, and an agency would come in and ask for 3 FTEs in this area, and 2 in this one, and 2 in that one, and we would make a decision. We would decide to fund the FTEs here, but maybe not here, maybe cut that one by half. And so, in that sense, the legislature very much has a voice in the executive department. So, I just wanted to toss that out there. I read editorials every day in the newspaper. I wanted to editorialize. I've managed to do that. I feel good about that. but anyway, I don't know. One other thing, I guess, thank you for coming up. I know, Bob, that you were forewarned that there were a couple of us kind of fired up today. And I appreciate your being here, and certainly Chuck and Lori too. So, I would thank you very much. I would ask one more thing. I think we'll take a very brief recess, or stand at ease, I should say, and we'll be right back. So no one needs to leave the room if we can keep you here. We just need to have a quick conference. Can you do it? Can you move the bill? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks. Please. So we will open a work session on House Bill 3044. 3480. Excuse me, I'm looking wrong. 3480. Representative Dalto, you have a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the -1 amendments to House Bill 3480.
Thank you, Representative Dalto. Representative Dalto moves Representative Hobson?
I was just going to discussion.
Oh, okay. Representative Dalto moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 3480. Representative Hobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I read the -1 amendments correctly, it says at the discretion of the department is to offer teacher development opportunities. They already do that, so I guess I'm not real clear of the purpose of the -1 amendments, but perhaps I'm missing something. Comments. End period.
Mike? Is Bob still here? Bob, might you comment on that question by Representative Hobson?
Mr. Chair, while Mr. Stewart comes up, are they already doing it for TAG?
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Seward from the Department of Education. The Department of Education currently does provide teacher training through our existing allocated staff to the TAG program, which, as you've already discussed, is a fairly limited amount. In addition, staff in my office and the Office of Curriculum Instruction Field Services have been working with Laura Pekkanen, who's our TAG specialist, for a number of months, and actually going on to a year, in trying to work on an instructional model called differentiated instruction so that our math specialists could use that model with teachers that would address the full spectrum of needs of kids in a classroom, so gifted kids as well as students with disabilities. That's becoming a pretty standard use in our office, and that was what I was referring to earlier about trying to bring all folks up to that standard and being able to provide that technical assistance and training to schools. So the short answer is yes, we are doing some of that.
Okay. But there are some other parts to Dash 1 which are helpful, I think. Okay. Will any further comment? Any opposition to the Dash 1s? Okay, so ordered. We've included the Dash 1s. Representative Dalton?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3480 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3480 as amended with a due to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Dalton moves that House Bill 3480 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Hobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be a no vote on this, and for a number of reasons. And I appreciate the discussion that has occurred. I appreciate the concern about gifted and talented students, but I think there are a couple more pervasive arguments. First of all, a comparison of special ed to TAG bothers me a great deal because I think we're really doing apples and oranges there. We are talking about exceptional students, but we're covering different ends of the spectrum with different requirements. And not as important to me, but certainly critical, are the federal mandates in that regard. I also believe, having been in education for so long, I don't think I was in for 37 years, though, but pretty close. TAG students are addressed in a number of ways, and I alluded to some of those in the course offerings that are present in schools, including physics and some of them I can't name real well because they're hard. Also the higher ed programs that we're instituting now, where students actually take a whole year of college while they're still in high school. There are many, many opportunities available to TAG students within the current program. The other issue I have with this is the oversight, and I use the word loosely. What I'm really talking about is micromanaging. To tell an agency that you have to take 2 FTE off of something that you have determined is important and put it on something that this group has determined is more important, I think is outside the idea of what I consider good organizational, and if you want to call it bureaucratic, so be it, management. And I guess the thing that we've done most to hurt our TAG students is in the overall programming, because the classes that are going to be cut in our schools are the ones that address the needs of those kids, be they in art and music or the higher courses that in the smaller school district, there will be no physics, there will be no of the higher math. Those are the ones that are going to get cut. And I guess lastly, probably glad to hear that, I think not sending this to Ways and Means is a violation of the way that we should and could do things here. So I will be a no vote.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Farr?
I will be a yes vote on this. And I appreciate the testimony we've had from very talented and very knowledgeable people. The reason I'm a yes vote on this, and the reason I'm a yes vote straight to the floor instead of Ways and Means, is that I feel strongly that we have to send a message to the department that we've heard from our constituents, that they have to pay attention to TAG. They have to find a way to pay attention to TAG within the vast group of training professionals that they have. And I just don't see it as being taking something else away I see it as letting people know what our constituents are telling us, that there's a fire burning out there. We're losing very talented kids. My son, for one, dropped out of the system, tag student, because his needs weren't served, and we've heard that from lots and lots of people. As far as what happens in the school level, at the school level is concerned, there are schools that are administering a tag program without any support from the state at all. I heard some testimony from someone over in the Senate education yesterday, from Dr. Paula Wilkes, who is a teacher in Eugene, and she does a tag program in her own classroom. She's able to do it without support, and I think that with a little bit of support, many, many more teachers, maybe not in all 196 districts or 198 districts, are going to get it accomplished, but we're going to start keeping kids in the system that otherwise we would lose, even with this little tiny bit of help that we're going to be able to provide to the teachers in the classroom.
Thank you. Representative Bakken.
I want to echo some of the things that Representative Farr said, and in the comments that I'm going to make, I want to recognize, too, the expertise that we have on this panel here, and that even though I am going to vote yes for this, and will vote yes on the floor, too, have a lot of respect for the kind of experience that Representative Hobson brings to this committee. I'm going to vote yes because the figures we've been presented that would make this look like it should go to Ways and Means, I believe, may be real. This may be expensive. But I do also know for a fact that when these tag kids don't get what they need, that it ends up costing us in huge ways in other areas. A lot of these kids never make it to the point where they can take advantage of the programs that are in high school or in college, because they either drop out or because their families and they can't deal with the kind of mental health problems that they have, because they can't survive in these schools without these programs. And the testament to that were the folks, the parents that we had come testify a month or so ago in our committee hearing. Some of whom had children that were on the verge of suicide because they were not getting the services that they needed. Now, you can't lay that all on the public school system, but certainly we're doing nothing with these tag kids to help accommodate the special needs that they have. I think there is a very fair comparison between the needs of these kids and the needs of the special ed students in public schools. So there is a cost, a human cost, and a financial cost by not taking care of these kids. Second, I don't think that we are just cherry-picking one program that is not being funded amongst many others. This bill does something different. Most of you know that I have been a huge supporter of getting the music and the arts and PE back in the core curriculum of public schools. But we have in the past had those programs, and we do have a structure that we can turn to if we want to instill those programs back. We don't have that with TAG. Part of the problem here is not just a funding issue, it's a structural issue, a process issue. And what this bill does is it instills, or at least begins to instill, a structure for us. We can worry about the funding another day, but we need something to start with that structure. That another day hopefully is tomorrow, but we need the structure. Lastly, and this is the biggest reason that I am going to vote for this, so much of our policy in this state regarding education turns on the federal dime. And there's a good reason why we have 34 people assigned to special ed. Not that we don't need them there, but they're there because of the federal funding. And I get a little fired up, too, when I think about what the kids in our state need. And the fact that so much of what they actually get, regardless of their need, is based on federal policy, not state of Oregon policy. We've got a great state motto that we fly with our own wings. And I tell you, more and more, I think we fold our wings when the feds come knocking with a big check. And I want a statement made with this bill that we're not going to do that, that we're going to make a statement that we have children that are in need in this state, and regardless of whether or not the feds are going to come with a check, we're going to start setting up a structure that's going to take care of those kids. And so even though we don't have the money now, let's send a statement that we're going to start building a structure, and then let's turn around and let's figure out how to pay for it soon. For that reason, I'm going to vote yes, and I thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you very much. Representative Dalto.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure I can really follow my gifted colleagues from Washington County's comments, but I think it's time, Mr. Chair, that we take a leadership role, that the Department of Education takes a leadership role in serving Oregon's talented and gifted students. I think that states across the state are working very hard at serving their students, but they lack a central coordinating vision. I believe the department, by failing to provide that coordinating vision, is abdicating their responsibility to our talented and gifted students. And I believe this fiscal impact is an attempt to be obstructive for creating the very structure that Representative Bakken so artfully laid out. And I just want to send a message that I will not cave on this bill. I will not relent on this fiscal, and I will not turn my attention away until Oregon adequately serves its TAG students. So let's go. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Jane, would you call the roll, please? Excuse. Excuse.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, the bill is declared passed. Representative Dalton, would you like to carry it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3480 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2843.
House Bill 2843 requires school districts to submit data that tracks talented and gifted children when districts apply for state funds for programs and services related to talented and gifted children. Applies to applications for funding submitted on or after effective date of Act, effective July 1, 2003. We do have a dash one amendment.
Okay, thank you very much. Bob, I think you're up again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Seward, Oregon Department of Education. The department for this bill, 2843, it takes no position, actually. What I would like to suggest is that we do probably collect most of the data that this bill would addresses as far as tracking the numbers on talented and gifted children statewide. We do collect that through the annual reports from school districts. We also collect data on student performance through the assessment records that we collect on students, their annual benchmark assessments of 3, 5, 8, and 10. We do are able to disaggregate that by many subpopulations, including talented and gifted, and have been actually looking at that data recently. So my only concern is that the term tracking is somewhat vague. I'm not sure exactly what the word tracking means, so I would want to have some further delineation of what that term means, so I know that we are, in fact, either are collecting the data now or what we need to do in the future.
Okay. Bob, you've looked at the dash ones?
I have not. I just heard there are dash ones just now. So.
Okay. And, yeah, I think we're interested in moving the dash one, so hopefully we can get you a copy and you can analyze what they're attempting to do, or what the dash one is attempting to do.
The change in the dash one is the section two dash, or sub three.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was going to be my question. If I'm reading this correctly, and if we do jump to sub 3, each school year the Department of Education shall collect from the school districts data that assists the department in determining how to improve special ed programs and special ed services. Is that where we are?
Yes.
But what does that mean? It's not numerical. We're asking for them.
For something else.
Yeah, I'm not real clear what that means.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, I believe that's true. And I would have the same comment about the term tracking. I would apply to parens 3, which is what exactly is intended by that, and what are the improvements that you'd want us to address through the data system.
Bob, I see here an advocate for TAG who requested the amendment. If Margaret DeLacy could come up, that would be helpful.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, did you have a specific question for me?
Are you looking at the dash ones?
I believe so.
Okay. Bob brought up the word, I think it'd be in line six, Bob. First of all, the word tracks. Is that one of your questions?
That is correct.
And then the other line was where now again? Maybe Representative Hobson brought that up. Representative, what was the other question you raised?
Mr. Chair, I felt that number three in the dash one amendments relates to soliciting information, textual substantive information, rather than numerical counting data.
Section three reads, I did not write this amendment, so the word, I didn't suggest the word tracking, you know, I see no reason why it couldn't be, you couldn't substitute follows if that's a more acceptable word.
What was that word again, Margaret?
Follows instead of tracks. Or Section 3 assists the department in determining how to improve special educational programs, and I believe, Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, the question was, what does improve mean? How would improvement be understood?
What I'm asking is, it seems to me this is asking for substantive textual message information rather than a numerical counting.
Mm-hmm. Well, Section 2 says data. So I would assume the word data would also apply to Section 3. That is data that would assist the department in determining how to improve these programs. And I believe that the sort of data that is understood by this is the sort of data that is also collected for comprehensive district improvement plans. Mr. Burke, when he came before this committee on March 24th, suggested that this process could and should, this data gathering piece could be included in comprehensive district improvement plans. And my suggestion was that we come up with an amendment that affected his suggestion. The sort of data that might be involved, for example, would be whether a given district has any staff assigned to TAG services within the district and what the nature of those programs are. I don't know whether you would consider that data or whether you would consider it more quantitative, but that was the intent of the amendment.
Representative Hobson, yeah.
I guess I'm asking if we're dealing with two different things here. If we're dealing with information that is solicited and collected and tracked, I like the word tracked, that comes in on the annual report information to the database, which are numerical categorical marks, or are we talking about a report type of data that actually assists departments in determining how to improve? If you're just referring to the data, the numerical information, that's one thing, and I certainly can go along with that. But if we're I think we need to be clear on what we're saying there.
I think Mr. Seward should answer that question first.
Maybe the word data does answer it.
Mr. Chair and members, I think you're all asking sort of the same question, either with vocally or with your eyes. Here's where I see... here's where I need some clarification about what the intent is. If you want a snapshot in time, you want to know what the population is, what does it look like, what's the demographics look like on a statewide basis, we have that data. Now, we can improve that, and actually Margaret and I talked about some improvements yesterday about just the snapshot information, the demographic information. But the bill seems to go beyond that. And here's where the bill seems to go in my mind, and that is in parens 2, what it seems to be going on here is that there's some need to look at how well children are performing as compared to the programs and services that are being provided. This is a differentiated analysis. What we need to do is look at all the various kinds of programs and services and then line that up with achievements of those kids in those kinds of programs and services. Now, that's a fairly complex data collection process that will have some impact on how we do data in our office. If you add the third one then, which is how do you improve programs, what you look then is at how well kids are achieving and how much those programs are costing and try to get the most efficient delivery for the best impact, the most achievement of kids. And that, again, is a fairly complex, complicated data analysis process. And we'll need a lot more data to get that done. So I'm just looking for clarity about where you want to go with this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Representative?
Mr. Chair, I have another question.
I don't know if it was the intent or even the interpretation, but Mr. Seward, you can help me with this. It says, tracks towns and gifted children who have been in a special education program. Does that mean only the students who are double identified as both CAG and special ed?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hobson, actually that was one of my very first questions, having come with both feet, or put in both of those camps, are these duly diagnosed kids, gifted special ed kids? And the answer was no, that's not the intent of the drafter of the bill. And so my guess is what happened is that we have some rules in the Department of Education, State Board rules, that refer to the talent and gifted program as special educational programs and services for talent and gifted children. And the language just got picked up, the special ed language got picked up.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Margaret, thank you. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2843, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2843. Representative Dalto?
Mr. Chair, can we stand at ease for just a moment?
Yes, we'll be at ease for just a moment.
Well, 2843 to the floor without amendment, with a do-pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Dalto moves House Bill 2843 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Vakian.
I'm gonna vote for that. I think there are some good sentiments within that Dash 1 amendment, and I would encourage the Senate to take a look at those when they get the bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Gina, call the roll, please.
Representative Scott.
Excuse.
Representative
Lafayette. Aye.
Representative
Dalton.
Aye.
Representative
Hoffman.
Aye.
Representative Nolan.
Excused. Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 2843 is declared passed. So we'll have a carrier.
Mr. Chair, could we put this one on the consent calendar?
No? I would object.
Okay.
Okay. I withdraw.
Okay. Carrier? Were you any volunteer? Okay. Representative Dalto volunteers to carry. Thank you. We'll then close the work session on House Bill 2843. We have a number of TAP bills to bring into session, and we'll do that. Committee, if you feel that you need to go to another meeting or something, you certainly are free to do that. We're just going to run through these.
Thank you.
Eight. Yeah, we'll tap them, yeah. So we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2904. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2904. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3037. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3037. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3140. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3140. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3171. We'll close a public hearing on House Bill 3171. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3242. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3242. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3267. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3267. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3470. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3470. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3564. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3564. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3578. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3578. And that concludes our taps. And with that, we will adjourn the meeting. Well,